Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From the Fan, hour number three of the Sunday Morning Grind. Josh Taylor on the mic. Greg Finley on the ones and twos. We are here till 11. You hear the music. That means it is time for our favorite news headline game, Is This a Thing? But before we get to that, I want to remind you to follow us on Twitter at 937TheFan. Driven by Shorty Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram with locations in North Huntington and North Hills. We are going to play our favorite news headline game, and here's how it works. Over the course of the week, Greg and I, we collect a few different headlines or tweets or things that have happened, and we pay attention to these things, and we see and hear these things, and we discuss among ourselves, is this a thing? Meaning, is this something worth our time and paying attention to, or is it indeed fake news? We're going to discuss these things. We'd love to get your feedback. Text us on the Edgar Snyder & Associates fan text line, 412-928-9370. Edgar Snyder & Associates reminds you to text responsibly. So we will start, and I believe this was Monday, during North Carolina and Florida State. There was a replay situation, and they were trying to debate how much time needed to be put back on the clock in this North Carolina, Florida State game. Sean McDonough, veteran play-by-play guy, been doing it for years. McDonough, during this delay, says, and I quote, "If this is all this is putting 1 second back on the clock, it is almost unfathomable that it's taken this long." He said that on the air during the broadcast of the game. If all this is putting 1 second back on the clock, it's almost unfathomable that it's taken this long. Play-by-play announcers getting a little snippy and a little bit impatient when it comes to replay. Greg Finley, is this a thing?
Especially the older ones. Oh, the ones that have seen it all and have seen basketball whenever they didn't have to go through all of this and just want the game to keep going on. Absolutely. Did you hear Dick Vitale after McDonough made the comment?
He's no.
Like, come on, let's play ball. Come on now. Like, what are we waiting for here?
I'll add a little bit on to this one. Now, granted, if there was frustration, the announcers last night did not voice it. Duke and North Carolina, there was another sizable delay there with about 15 seconds left in regulation because they were trying to decide if the ball off of a free throw rebound went off of North Carolina or off of Duke, because if it went off North Carolina, Duke gets the ball on North Carolina's end, down by three in regulation, with a chance to tie it, which they eventually did, by the way. If it had gone off Duke, North Carolina gets the ball going the other way. By the way, that was an amazing game. But we'll get more to that later on. We'll talk about Duke Carolina and how. And I'll ask Cale Berger, 93.7 The Fan Zone, in about 45 minutes, whether or not he thinks Duke Carolina is still the best rivalry in college basketball and maybe in all sports. We'll discuss that. But that happened last night. There was a long delay about whether or not they should add time back on the clock. I think they ended up staying the way it was. They didn't change anything. They left it at 15 seconds even. Because it was down to, like, should they add, like, 0.2 seconds? I think they were like, you know what, it doesn't matter. So they left it at 15. But, yeah. The old school announcers and analysts, they hate it. They are starting to hate this. They're hating the extended replay. They're hating the time it takes to get the call right. And my thing is, if you're going to go to all this trouble, if you're going to have all this money spent, if you're going to have all this effort being put in by coaches and players and administrators and all this stuff to put these games on, the least you can do is get the call right. That's the least you can do. Get it right. A lot of stuff being put on the line here. Because let's be honest, this ain't like a high school game over at Chartiers Valley with Chartiers Valley in South Park. This ain't that. This is Division I college basketball. This is big business now. This is This is ACC basketball. North Carolina, Florida State, Duke, UNC, Pitt, Georgia Tech. This is big business now. People's careers rely on this stuff in more than one facet, in more than one area. The least you can do is get it right. That's all I'm saying. Least you can do. So, I know I don't mind it, but some of these older announcers, whoo! They don't like it, and I think this is a thing. You mentioned Dick Vitale, Greg. Let's move on to another Dick Vitale-related story. Did you see Bob Knight return to Indiana yesterday? Now, this was a big deal for college basketball fans, of course. Longtime Indiana head coach, one of the winningest head coaches of all time, Bob Knight. If you remember how his tenure ended at Indiana and how he was fired and why he was fired and pretty much everything that kind of snowballed from there. There was a lot of animosity between him and the University of Indiana, particularly with their board of directors, the board of regents, I think it is. He was really super bitter with them. Well, in the past few years, I guess they've found ways to mend fences, and Bob Knight, who was, you know, a lot more advanced in age than he was when he was coaching and probably a little bit more feeble-minded, but he returned to Indiana yesterday. And one of the people that he saw at that game, which I believe was at Assembly Hall in Bloomington, if I'm not mistaken, one of the people he saw was Dick Vitale. And Dick Vitale, being Dick Vitale, kind of tried to give Coach Knight a hard time, and Bob Knight was not having any of it. It really looked like at one point Bob Knight was going to rear back and punch Dick Vitale. It got super awkward and really, really weird. My question. Bob Knight nearly punching Dick Vitale in a reunion in Indiana. Greg Finley, is this a thing?
No, I think it was just a joke.
It looked like he was about to hit him to me. I think Dick Vitale was messing with Bob Knight, but I don't know, man. If that goes an extra 10 seconds, that's all I'm saying. I think there was a time when the two guys probably did, you know, joke around a little bit, but Bob Knight. Here's the one thing about when you get older. When you get older, the filter's gone. Like, you know, when you're younger, like you filter stuff out. Like, especially when you were in like your, you know, with like 30s, 40s, 50s, you have a filter. Once you get past a certain age, I don't know if it's between like 60 and 65, that filter's gone, and people just start saying stuff. And they just go with the first thing that comes to their mind, and I'm like, is Bob Knight serious, or is he playing? I can't tell. It looked like a thing to me. That's all I'm saying. Like, him looked like he was about to punch Jake Vitale. It looked like a thing. That's all I'm saying. All right, let's stick with basketball, because we got to talk about the NBA All-Star Game, which, of course, is coming up. But they picked the teams for the All-Star Game. They drafted between LeBron James and Giannis Antetokounmpo. So Team Giannis and Team LeBron. But here's the thing. When you look at the draft between these two teams, I don't know if Giannis was really doing the same thing LeBron was. Now, LeBron got the first pick. He took Anthony Davis, like, straight up. He takes his teammate AD with his first pick. So it was like, okay, cool. So here's the team that LeBron James picked. His fellow starters, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, Luka Doncic, James Harden. That's the starters for Team LeBron. Off the bench, Damian Lillard, Ben Simmons, Nikola Jokic, Jason Tatum, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, Domantas Sabonis. It's a really good team for Team LeBron. Here's Team Giannis. Joel Embiid, Pascal Siakam, Kemba Walker, Trae Young, Chris Middleton, Bam Adebayo, Rudy Gobert, Jimmy Butler, Kyle Lowry, Brandon Ingram, and Donovan Mitchell. Team LeBron looks a lot better than Team Giannis. Here's my question. Giannis being the worst team captain in All-Star history in picking a team. Greg, is this a thing?
I think it is a thing.
Wow.
I mean, when they announced who he drafted, it's like, man, he just drafted a bunch of tall, lengthy dudes that he thinks they're just going to post up underneath and then kick it out to Trae Young or Kemba Walker. Like, what are you thinking with this team?
I don't know. You know what it looks like? It looks like those Xavier teams for like a 5 or 6 year period. Xavier just had like 6 or 7, like 6'7", 6'8", 6'9" dudes, and that was their entire starting lineup. Remember those days? I want to say those were the late Sean Miller Xavier days, and like, who came after him? Was it Thad Mata? Or was it Thad Mata then Sean Miller? Where Xavier just had like a lineup full of dudes that were between like 6'6" and 6'10". Like that was the whole lineup. That's what that sounds like. But the difference was the Xavier dudes probably played their positions a little bit better than this group is going to. I don't know what Giannis was doing, but I'm like, this is not it, Giannis. This ain't it, Chief. Got to do better. If Team LeBron doesn't win by 20, there's something wrong. That's all I'm saying. All right, let's get to baseball. We talked about this at the bottom of the previous hour. This trade between the Twins, the Dodgers, and the Red Sox, here was originally what was supposed to happen. The Dodgers were supposed to get Mookie Betts, David Price, and cash from the Red Sox. Bear in mind, Mookie Betts, David Price, expected to make a combined $60 million between the two of them this season and upcoming payroll. So the Dodgers send two players worth $60 million and cash to Boston to help cover some of it. Boston sends those two to the Dodgers. Excuse me. So Boston sends two players and cash to the Dodgers to help foot the bill. The Red Sox in return get outfielder Alex Verdugo, 23 years old, Brusdar Graterol, a pitcher from the Twins, who were the third team inserted in this, Verdugo 23, Graterol is 20, a combined $1.2 million between them in salary last season, if that, if you're looking at estimated amounts. Meanwhile, the Twins, who include Graterol in the deal, they get Kenta Maeda from the Dodgers. Since then, the Twins have pulled out of the deal, and now you're left with just the Red Sox and Dodgers to figure something out, unless they find another third team. But my question, this Mookie Betts-David Price deal still happening, going from Boston to L.A. Greg, is this a thing now?
There's an opportunity that it could be a thing, but it could be not with the Dodgers. I read this morning that other teams reached out once it was said that the Twins backed out. The Dodgers definitely need help when it comes to this deal. You're going to need a third team.
Mm-hmm.
But the Red Sox seem very eager to move Betts and Price because, again, they want to shed contracts here. But from what I was reading today, it seems like the Red Sox want to make a deal with any team.
Wow. So this may not happen necessarily with the Dodgers. So I think you and I agree this is not a thing. Or it could potentially not be a thing. Wow. Says a lot. Now,
and keep in mind that the Padres moved Manuel Margot to the Rays, and now they are the front runner if the Dodgers are not to pursue Betts in this deal. So they could get Price and Betts for the Padres.
Remember, Manuel Margot was a guy who was discussed in a possible Starling Marte trade. And that's like apparently, reportedly, who Ben Cherington wanted, and the Padres said no. So there's that. Now, as we talk about big trades involving a lot of money, let's go to the Cubs, because the Cubs are getting called out for not wanting to pay Chris Bryant. Or not wanting to do much of anything. Here's what's crazy. Here's what Baseball America wrote. I believe it's Baseball America. Also, no one is asking for a magic free agent every single year. The Cubs still have a core that should provide a good baseline for contention with a few improvements. The problem is that, thanks to luxury tax penalties that a billionaire could easily afford, Ricketts has the payroll to such a strict limit that making any such improvements is impossible. Declining to bid on Gerrit Cole does not mean that the entire offseason has to boil down to 1. Sign Steven Souza Jr. 2. Make excuses. 3. Profit. This is where the Cubs are. They have spent 2 consecutive offseasons with no significant acquisitions whatsoever. Chris Bryant has been dangled in trade talks, and fans are being told that they'll have to choose between keeping Bryant or Javi Baez in order to help a billionaire who owns a sports team that made over $400 million in local revenue in 2018 stay under the sports competitive balance tax. So the Cubs are getting roasted for pretty much not doing anything the last 2 off-seasons. Absolutely roasted. And among the possible moves they might make could be either dumping one of Chris Bryant or Javi Baez. The Cubs trying to dump two of their best players, or at least one of the two, whether it's Bryant or Baez. Greg, is this a thing?
Yeah, I think it is a thing.
What?
I could see Chris Bryant getting moved by the end of this offseason, which is insane to say, but if somebody puts out the right offer, I could see it happening. And I think he wants out because he's being mistreated by the Cubs.
He had that hearing about his service time because his season ended short last year, and if he would have kept it going, he might have been eligible for another year of service time. I think you got a point. I think you're on to something. And they're getting ready to go to Arizona for spring training. I believe the Cubs train in Arizona. Spring training is around the corner, which reminds me, about an hour, we'll talk to Alex Stump, who's going to be landing in Bradenton. We'll talk Pirates. I think this is a thing. Remember what I told you about that trade at the end of the last hour? Teams dumping salary to try to stay below luxury tax. Here's the crazy part. If you're going to stay below luxury tax, why not just have a salary cap? If you're going to sit here and try to stay below a luxury tax that you don't want to pay, and you're going to sit there and cry poverty like they did last year with their pockets turned out, like Rich Uncle Pennybags, why not just have a salary cap? Why not just have a floor in the cap and be done with it? It seems kind of a waste of time, right? You make $400 million in revenue and now you want to play poor? What? Just to let you know, folks, it ain't just happening in Pittsburgh. Got to take a break. We got an update on deck when we come back. We're going to feel a lot better in a few minutes. It'll be the return of the First Lady of the Sunday Morning Grind, Angie Carducci, Inside Hockey Magazine. She will join us to talk Pens. We will do that when we come back. This is the Sunday Morning Grind, Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Halfway through hour number 3 of the Sunday Morning Grind. I still thought it was hour number 2. That's how quickly his show's gone. Josh Taylor on the mic, Greg Finley on the turntable. We have discussed quite a bit of college basketball. We've discussed some baseball. We've discussed some football. We have not talked hockey yet in the show. That's because usually we do it around this time. And to help us do that is a favorite of many grinders who listen to the show. Matter of fact, so much that they have named her the First Lady of the Sunday Morning Grind. Her name is Angie Carducci. She writes for Inside Hockey Magazine. She joins us right now on the Fan Hotline, brought to you by Workers' Compensation Law Firm of Hall and Capetus, right now on 93.7 The Fan. Angie, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Josh.
Angie, let's start. Let's go with... I'm trying to figure out where to start because so much stuff happened in the past week. Let's start with the John Marino injury. Let's start there because it just seems like every time we turn around, there's just another injury and there's just more man games lost. And I believe last night, if I saw this correctly from you, was it 226 total man games lost now with this team this season?
That's exactly right.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's pretty crazy. And my favorite statistic, which I also retweeted from somebody, is he had posted the if you go to the NHL Man Games Lost Twitter account, they post a fascinating graphic that shows the quality of players lost, which I think is just the most impressive thing for the Penguins. They show like a bubble graphic of the bubbles get increasingly bigger in size based on the quality of the players that a team has lost and the impact they think it makes on the overall standings for that team. So the Penguins naturally have the biggest bubble where that's concerned because they've missed significant amounts of time from players like Sidney Crosby and Brian Dumoulin. And, you know, when you look at players like that who make a really big impact on your lineup and the number of points that you could have missed, there's a real argument the Penguins could be easily in first place in the NHL right now because they're not that far off, even with the situation they've been dealing with. So, they've potentially taken another big one in John Marino, and the situation sounds very up in the air. There are multiple outlets reporting that he may need surgery, that his cheekbone has been broken in 3 places, which makes perfect sense if you watch that play from Tampa the other night. The shot from Steven Stamkos got deflected into his cheekbone, and he looked pretty stunned for a few minutes, and it took him a bit to get off the ice and just didn't look good. And I've read reports that his eye has looked really swollen. And that could be part of it, too. Maybe they're waiting for that swelling to go down a little bit until they can really evaluate him. So when he gets back to Pittsburgh on Monday, that's when they plan to do another evaluation. So maybe it hasn't been determined if he actually needs surgery yet or they can get off without it. So that will go a long way to determine how long this is going to affect them. But any games he misses are very important for the Penguins because he has become a very legitimate top four defenseman. They're missing one in Dumoulin, who isn't even skating yet, and that's a big deal.
Now, on top of that, they just got Justin Schultz back. They just got a guy back, what, a week and a half ago, and
thank
now they lose another
for that. Yeah, thank goodness for that, right? Thank goodness you do have Schultz back, because if this had come a little bit earlier, you would have been in bigger trouble. But I don't know if Schultz has been especially impressive to me since he's been back. I feel like he's still kind of finding his way. But, yeah, they have at least dodged a bullet there where they have a guy back in their top four. So, but Sean Marino, I mean, we've talked about him a lot this year. He's been such an incredible surprise. He is absolutely in the discussion as a rookie of the year finalist. And I think every list he kind of makes just below the top three in that top four spot. So, if it's a premature end to his season, or even if he misses a significant amount of time, that impacts that, but it also really impacts the Penguins and their chances of, you know, every major injury like that you withstand. It's just another hit on a team that has done a very admirable job of withstanding a lot.
Yeah, and it also lends to the discussion, especially when we're talking about Marino as a relation to Schultz, because Schultz is an upcoming unrestricted free agent, I should say. And then Marino's still under contract next season before he becomes a restricted free agent. So you're saving a lot cap-wise, assuming you let a Justin Schultz walk to keep a John Marino, and that really benefits you down the road since Marino's only 22 years old.
Absolutely. And I really have felt for a while now that they're probably intending to let Justin Schultz walk at the end of the season. I think some other team will probably pay him more than they are willing and able to. But, you know, you never know. I think Justin Schultz could be impacted by the fact that he has had a bit of a down season. He's been injured a lot this year. So perhaps Justin Schultz isn't going to command the money we thought he would at the start of the year, and maybe the Penguins can find a way to make that work if they want to. But at the start of the year, you would think he was going to command the kind of money they couldn't even think about matching. If his demands have gone down based on that, or if the market for him has gone down, maybe they do find a way to make it work. But the Penguins are definitely not going to overpay him.
Angie Carducci, Inside Hockey Magazine, first lady of the Sunday Morning Grind, so named by the Grinders themselves. She joins me right now on 93.7 The Fan. Angie, Penguins come off a short little road trip in Washington last Sunday. Then they go to Tampa and lose to the Lightning. Then they beat Florida last night in Sunrise. And now they come back for a four-game homestand starting with Tampa Tuesday night. Let's kind of circle back to that Tampa matchup on Thursday. It seems like this is, if there is one matchup, if when I look at certain matchups on paper, especially in the Eastern Conference, the two that always stand out to me are Boston and Tampa. Now, the Boston comeback win, the last time they faced Boston, is one thing that sticks out. But for some odd reason, they face Tampa, and I always just fear the worst. But not only with just this past matchup Thursday, but the upcoming matchup Tuesday, what is it about this team, and what is it about Tampa?
Yeah, Tampa is very much like Boston, I think, where they have a very intimidating mix of being a very skilled team, but also a very physical team. So the Penguins seem to have problems with teams like that. Tampa's legitimately one of the best teams in the conference and could emerge as a Stanley Cup contender, legitimately have to be considered a Stanley Cup contender. Yes, so do the Penguins. So I think when you see a matchup like that, you look at it as sort of a test on paper, and if you looked at that game on Thursday, I don't think the Penguins came out of it looking very good in terms of their chances of contending against a team like that as their current lineup is constituted. So they just, a number of players on the team didn't have their best nights that night, which was disappointing for them. And, you know, Sidney Crosby being one of them, which is not something you really ever can say. I thought Evgeny Malkin looked great in that game, so he continues a really dominant season. That's good news for them. But what really stuck out to me in that game is the reason the Penguins lose that game. You know, it's such a slender margin of victory. And when you go 0-5 on the power play and an opportunity that you have late in the game to tie that game is a minute and a half on a two-man advantage on the power play, and you can't make that happen. They passed up a number of opportunities to try to score in that power play. I just feel like the power play is trying to be too cute. It's not just firing shots at the net when they get the opportunity, and it's just not a way you can play against a team like Tampa. You have to take advantage of opportunities like that. So with that minute and a half man advantage, I figured, you know, you're watching it, and you're like, okay, just a matter of time. The Penguins will tie this game. And when they don't and they're passing up looks, you just shake your head and wonder what has to change with the power play, because it's been a problem on and off for them all season. And in that game, it really came to the forefront as a difference maker.
Before we let you go, Angie, we got to talk about this because, of course, last Sunday we saw Pens and Capitals in D.C. Pens come back and win 4-3. Now we look at the standings in the Metro. Washington in first place with 77 points. Penguins in second place with 73. And these two teams still have yet a few times to face each other. Last week was the first time they faced each other all season. So they're going to go head-to-head quite a few more times before it's all said and done. And if we see a trend of Penguins wins over the Capitals, when do we start talking about the opportunity or the possibility of this team possibly still being a division winner despite all these things happening around them?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've definitely been talking about it. I think that goes on in the media a lot. Mike Sullivan was asked about that recently, how often they look at the standings and if they think about that. And he said, and I actually believe him when he says this, that they don't look at that at all. They're focused on the game right in front of them. They're not looking at that whatsoever. But, you know, I think it's a very real possibility. And I think the NHL was pretty clever knowing that would be a possibility. These are two powerhouse teams in the division, and scheduling those head-to-head matchups late in the season, they knew there would be an opportunity for this to happen and that those games could be really, really important games for the final standings and potentially going into the playoffs. Maybe these are two teams that could meet and could go in with a lot of sort of a rivalry ramped up from those games that were really important headed down the stretch. So very good opportunity for that to happen. And the Penguins haven't really fielded their best lineup yet against the Capitals. So if you think about that and the players they've been missing and have an opportunity to potentially come back, you know, Jake Gensel isn't going to be back for the regular season, but if it goes well into the playoffs, he could potentially come back. And you just kind of think of the opportunity the Penguins still have in front of them. They could have Brian Dumoulin at some point when they play the Capitals again, even if they don't have Gensel at that point. But I just feel like the Penguins haven't even seen the best version of themselves. So if they get that turned on, they really could make a run against these Capitals. I think it's very legitimate. They could end up in first place.
And that's something that would definitely help them as far as the playoff seeding is concerned. So it makes it a very, very attainable goal and something that's worth pursuing. In the meantime, Angie, we appreciate the time. We'll talk again next week.
My pleasure, Josh. Thanks.
Angie Carducci, Inside Hockey Magazine, first lady of the Sunday Morning Grind, so named by the Grinders themselves. And if I'm a fan, like just even thinking about winning a division right now, would as a fan, it would make me nervous. Because you see so many players going down left and right. You just got this young defenseman in John Marino who's playing so well, has become part of your top four, and he's really performing the way, you know, I don't think anybody expected him to. And now he gets hurt. And that's after you've already lost a guy in Brian Dumoulin, who's one of your more stable guys on the defensive end. You just keep having these big name or your bigger, more important guys to your team go down left and right. It's hard to think division championship right now, at least for me. But we're getting to that point in February where we're just a couple months away from the playoffs. So this division race is really starting to pick up, and you still got to face the Capitals a lot more before it's all said and done. So it makes it more of an immediate and possibly realistic thing. Even though it makes me uncomfortable talking about it, it's reality. They're going to have to stare in the face. And if they can get themselves a favorable draw because of winning the division as opposed to finishing second or third, it makes the season even that much more easy to appreciate. In the meantime, we are way, way over time. So we got a break. We got an update on deck. When we come back, Cale Berger, 93.7 The Fan's Own, joins me in studio. We will talk Pitt basketball. Big win yesterday over Georgia Tech. And I say big because it helps Pitt really establish some confidence. And more or less, it's also big, I think, because of the performance of one player in particular. And I'll explain why this is important and why it's big with Cale here in just a few moments. In the meantime, Greg, can we do the update now? Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Down to the last few minutes of hour number three of the Sunday Morning Grind. Josh Taylor on the mic, Greg Finley on the wheels of steel. We are here till 11. Also, you don't want to miss our 10th anniversary retrospective day on February 14th. Valentine's Day, of course, coming up on Friday. We go commercial free from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. with many special guests and lots of content from the past 10 years. That's commercial free from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. on February 14th, celebrating the fans' 10th anniversary. Now, to help me join, or just to joining the show to help me, can you tell I haven't slept a lot? Joining to help me talk about some Pitt basketball this morning, we talked a little bit of college hoops in the show already, but to help me do that, 93.7 The Fan's Own, I like to call him our resident impressionist, but also heavily involved in Pitt pregame, both football and basketball. Also host of the Corner 3 podcast, Cale Berger joins me right now on 93.7 The Fan. Cale, good morning.
Good morning, Josh. How are you?
Doing okay, brother. How you been?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Always good to talk to you. By the way, my bad. I was expecting you in studio. I forgot that we talked about it on the phone and I thought you were coming in, so we got wires crossed. But
no problem. Worked out fine.
Yeah, I'm pushing 40. I'm getting old. Anyway. thank you for appreciating that joke. Let's talk Pitt and Georgia Tech yesterday. The things that stuck out to me, of course, I've always been one of those proponents that if you can win at home consistently, it's going to help you. And we had seen the Pete become such a difficult place to play over the years, especially in the Jamie Dixon years. But Pitt gets another win at home yesterday under Jeff Capel. I won't say that it's back to that expectation for maybe that 10-year period, but it's starting to lean that way where it feels more and more like this team at home, you don't want to say they're totally unbeatable, but you just feel a lot better when you see them tip off in a home game.
No, you're absolutely right. And the Panthers now 11-4 at home on the season. They've been so good in front of that home crowd. But really, it's really impressive what Jeff Capel's done in basically a year and a half. And that's kind of turned the Pete and turned this Pitt basketball program back into something that, you know, this city and this fan base can really be proud of and really rally behind. And, you know, you see the Oakland Zoo is back in its full force, its full numbers, as it used to be. But, you know, this team, the way that they're playing and the style of play, it leads itself for people to get behind them. And it also creates an atmosphere for opposing teams that, you know, things don't really go their way when it comes to Pete to play. You know, they play incredible on-ball defense. They play with energy. They block shots. I mean, they do all those things that make it difficult for a road team to come into a place that already had such a reputation. But now that the team is having the kind of success that it is as of late, it really is turning into one of those tougher places to play in college basketball once again.
Now let's jump into this game in particular against Georgia Tech. The things that stood out to me were, first of all, Trey McGowan's 14 points, 9 assists. When you see something like that, it makes you feel a lot better because he's still becoming a guy that becomes a lot more reliable. But then a 7 more assists for Xavier Johnson to go with his 11. But then there's the thing that sticks out the most. Justin Champagne, this kid's a freshman, 12 of 17 from the field, 3 or 4 from three-point range, 30 points, 9 rebounds. And it's crazy to imagine that he almost had his 6th double-double of the season. But I'm starting to wonder if it's crazier that he's still starting to emerge as a guy whose game is still kind of unfolding in front of us.
Yeah, it's really incredible how good Justin Champagne has been. And I saw a tweet yesterday after the game that reminding us that he was something like the 243rd player in the country or something like that coming out of high school. And it just kind of goes to show that, you know, not everyone's a top 5-star prospect, something like that. You can find good basketball players really anywhere. But yeah, he's been impressive all season. And I think the biggest thing for me that is it almost seems like the game has slowed down for him already. And that's something you talk about with younger guys and how long that process takes. Well, it seems like it's already happened for him. He's always in the right spot. He's always making the right play. He plays beyond his years on the floor, and he can just do so many things. And what I always talk about is, and this isn't a negative at all, but he gets a lot of the garbage buckets. What I mean by that, he's always in the right spot to get a put back, to get an offensive rebound. He makes perfect cuts. He does a lot of things really well for a guy that's only about 19 years old. So, yeah, he's been really impressive. And then when you look at McGowan's, like you said, the 14 points, 9 assists, I think what's been most impressive for me with him is he's been a little, hot and cold offensively, and it kind of goes from half to half. In the first half, he wasn't great against Georgia Tech. He came alive in the second. But I think what's really impressed me is he's done a really nice job of filling in with that backup point guard role as the secondary ball handler, secondary distributor on this team, because they really don't have a backup point guard behind Xavier Johnson. And Trey McGowan's done a really nice job being a facilitator, getting other guys involved, something that he really wasn't doing last year. He had 55 assists all of last season. He is 88 at this point through the season, through 24 games, wherever they are. So he's really made a jump there, and I think it's really helped this team.
Cale Berger, Pitt football and men's basketball pregame studio host here on 93.7 The Fan. Also writes for Pittsburgh Sports Now, and he's the host of the Corner 3 podcast, joining me right now on the Sunday Morning Grind. Cale, you look at the rest of the schedule for this Pitt team. Of course, Clemson coming up here in a few days. Then Virginia Tech on the road Saturday. Got Florida State on the road a few days after that. Then home against UVA, home against Syracuse, on the road against NC State and Georgia Tech. I look at that three-game cluster between at Florida State, really good program down there, Leonard Hamilton's running, plus home at Virginia, home against Syracuse. You know, you never want to assume just because they're not at the levels we're really expected to see them at, you never want to assume those would be easy games. But the rest of the schedule with this team at 15-9 already, you don't want to look past certain spots of it, but I still like the general possibility of this team being a 19-20 win team when it's all said and done.
I agree. And you look at the way that they play, their style of play. I mean, they can beat anybody. And they've played every team tough this year. There's not really been any blowout in the schedule. Every game is within, 10 points or so if it was a loss. I mean, they're always in the game, and they're always making it interesting at the end, even if they might be outmatched by some teams. And, when coming up to that Florida State team, Florida State's one of the best teams in the country, obviously, but Pitt already beat them in the season opener. So Florida State's probably going to have a little more something to play for, going to want some, revenge against the Panthers. But you look at all the schedules, the games down the schedule, down the stretch, and they're all winnable games. But it's all what it all comes down to for this team is, you can say flyers, and we can win any game, but it's a matter of going on the floor and doing it. And we saw that earlier in the week against Notre Dame. That was a game that Pitt probably could have won. It was the first time that Pitt had lost all season when they scored over 70 points, but they gave up 80 for the last time this year. So, it's a very slim margin between winning and losing for this Pitt team. They have the ability to win any game, but it's all about a matter of going out there on the floor and taking care of business when they can. And they have the ability to do that, but they just have to do it.
Cale Berger, what we'll do is, since we're up against the break here, we will put Cale on hold, and what we'll do is top of the hour, we'll bring Cale back. I want to talk bracketology. I want to talk a really, really big ACC game that happened last night that I still think is, if not one of the biggest in its particular sport, it might be the biggest rivalry in all sports. We'll talk about that top of the hour. Plus, we got to get into the NBA trade deadline. And what happened during the picking of the All-Star teams? What was Giannis doing? We got to discuss all that when we bring Cale back here at the top of the hour. But